Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. The work of Vincent Valdez is some of the most recognizable art coming out of San Antonio. His monumental charcoals and paintings have dealt with religion, social justice, and stereotypes around masculinity and ethnicity. Growing up in San Antonio's South Side, Valdez was recognized early as a talent. After a degree at Rhode Island School of Design, Valdez would go on to become the youngest person at 26 years old to mount a solo exhibition at McNay Art Museum. Since then, Valdez has racked up successful exhibitions worldwide. Most recently, Valdez was named the 2015 Texas State Visual Artist 2D. And I want to welcome Vincent Valdez to The Source. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Our phone lines are open. If you got a question or comment for Vincent about his artwork, I mean, we'd really like to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. So, Vincent, let's talk about you growing up in San Antonio. What is it about being on the South Side, being a San Antonio born and bred guy? How does that come through into your art?
You know, I always considered the South Side of San Antonio a very unique community. It's a very special place. I've tackled it as a subject throughout the past 10 years or so. But it was always a magical place. You know, it's a very unique place in respects of being this sort of head-on collision between the old school and the new school. They just sort of coexist. You know, the older generations are still there. My whole family grew up there. My grandparents are still there. All my family lives practically on the same block, on the same street. So it's that kind of tight-knit community that makes for some very special memories and a very friendly place.
The sounds, the smells.
Oh, yeah, the sounds of the AM radios in the backyard, the lawnmowers, because everybody takes, you know, my dad claims he's very proud of having, like, the golden lawn on Taft Street. And the ice cream trucks, kids playing outside. I mean, it really sort of has that old school feel to it, you know, and I always enjoy going back to visit the parents and the grandparents. It's a great place.
All right, so let's get a caller on the air. The number is 210-614-8980 if you want to talk to Vincent Valdez. Chris has called in. You want to put your headphones on so you can hear what Chris wants to tell us? And Chris, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for having me.
Hey, go ahead.
What's going on? My name is Chris, and I'm a graduate of Burbank High School. I graduated in 2000, and so that was a couple of years after Vincent did. Go Bulldogs. But my question is, because he did all the artwork in the cafeteria, it's still there, beautiful, very proud of it, loved it. But the mural that he did on the side of the girls' gym was torn down by the principal a few years back. It was like a slap in the face to me and a lot of people in the community when I drove by that high school and I didn't see Vincent's artwork up there. How did you feel about it? I want to say I'm sorry they did that to you. It's awful. I feel like they did it to us, to be completely honest with you.
Well, Chris, tell me about this mural. What did it look like?
It was a mural, and it represented world soccer. It also had a... it had some Aztec warriors on there. It had some soccer players. It also had a Tabasco bottle, and the Tabasco bottle was like right in the middle.
Right.
And it was like they were fighting for a ball, for a tackle, and it was a beautiful mural. Nobody ever defaced it.
Right.
I was proud of it. I used to take people by and drive and be like, look at this, man, isn't this beautiful? And we'd sit there and stare. And it's funny because I did that to a couple of college brothers. I took them by, and then a week later, they tore it down.
All right,
Chris. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. I painted that mural in 1993 as a sophomore in high school. I was sitting in art class and entered an art contest. It was sponsored by Tabasco McElhenney sauce, hot sauce. And I won the competition grand prize. And so part of the prize by total coincidence was that I was going to be paired with my mentor already, who was Alex Rubio, as lead artist. And we were going to spend the entire like spring break out in the hot sun on scaffolding painting this image. And so I was very proud of the piece. You know, both Alex and I were. And, you know, I think that when this incident happened, I had just moved back from Los Angeles to San Antonio. And I was very surprised by it, but I gotta say that the biggest surprise of all was that I honestly had no clue that it meant so much to the community, that the community felt so proud, took so much pride in the mural, in the history of the mural, in the presence of the mural. And I think for me, like, that was really the most rewarding part out of this sort of, you know,
But it didn't sound like there was anything controversial in there. There was no content in there that would be inflammatory.
Not at all. I mean, it was a very public mural for the community. So it's a very safe image. You know, I was 15 years old when I did it. And but I think it was just the manner in which that principal at the time had gone about seeking to wipe it out overnight without getting any kind of input from the school faculty, the students, or the community. And so, again, I was just extremely surprised at how the community rallied together. And they were very upset and offended by it. You know, but at the same time, these things happen. Murals are never permanent. You know, they're temporary, especially in the Texas sun. I mean, the weather alone beats them up. And so, you know, I really cherish the memories of just working out there. And again, it just sort of means the world that the community was really sort of gathered around this monument of art.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about your experience with murals. Apparently, you started when you were 9 or 10 years old.
I started with Alex Rubio, who I met at the old Esperanza Peace and Justice Center that used to be on North Flores Street. Back in the day, I was in the fifth grade, and you know, I was a very quiet kid. I showed up with my little folder of drawings and met this unique-looking character, you know, who was Alex, you know, who was from the West Side in the projects, and but was this amazing artist at 18 years old. I was 9 years old, and Alex saw what I was capable of and asked me to be his apprentice. And so we embarked every summer after that for many years around the city of San Antonio, just sitting on scaffolding winter and summer, and just painting the town. It was a lot of fun. It was one of the greatest forms of education I ever had.
So what is your favorite mural that stands today still?
Well, the only one I have left actually is the murals in the series of murals in the cafeteria at Burbank High School. It's the history of rock and roll. That first mural that I did in 1989 was still up at the old Esperanza up until about 2 years ago. And so the irony of it was it was the first one, and it was in the best shape out of all of them. But Burbank is really taking the cafeteria murals under their wing, and they really do a great job at preserving them, and so, you know, I'm very fortunate.
San Antonio still has a very vibrant, robust mural scene.
Definitely, and I got to say that probably one of the most positive aspects that came out of this mural incident that Chris was talking about was that the SAISD passed an actual, I guess, a bill that protects all murals in SAISD from here on out. Anytime that a mural is about to get removed, they have to go through a proper procedure informing and communicating with others.
So moving on from there, I mean, you studied art and you went on to get your professional art chops, just beyond mural drawing, but
sure.
And you went on to a painting.
I attended the Rhode Island School of Design from 97 through 2000. I got out with my BFA, and what an experience. I mean, it was, talk about culture shock. You know, I thought the entire world was like Texas. I really thought that everybody ate breakfast tacos and drank Big Red and listened to conjunto music. And then I arrived in Providence, Rhode Island, and it really was an awakening. And but what an experience, what an important experience for a young person to have, to travel outside of Texas, because you learn so much, and to be able to come back and return home
right.
Is an experience in itself.
We're talking with Vincent Valdez. He's a San Antonio artist. He was named recently the 2015 Texas State Visual Artist 2D. He has shown around the world, recognized for his incredible talent and his vision for social justice. If you got a question for a comment for Vincent, we want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. With me in the studio, Vincent Valdez, the local artist. He's known around the world for his amazing, almost photorealistic art. But I don't know, you don't want to be known as a photorealistic artist, you're more concerned about the content and, sure. and the framing and the images, the social justice that you're talking about.
Sure. You know, I think for me, it's always been important as an artist. You know, I've never been too concerned or interested in sort of genres or categories of painting. Photorealism doesn't interest me. You know, I don't even really apply the term Latino artist, you know, as a painter. I really enjoy painting what I am most concerned with at the moment and the world around me.
Yeah, but still you are very informed by sure. Many of the issues that have happened in Texas concerning the Mexican Americans.
Sure, you know, and I think for me it's my experience, it's my eyes, it's my way of seeing and perceiving the world that I grew up in, the world that I'm still a part of. So I tend to gravitate more towards these very sort of edgy, heavy subjects that don't tend to have a lot of presence, not only in the world, but also in the art world especially. And so I'm very driven and sort of ignited by issues that I feel have a lot of relevance in terms of concerning the past with the present, because it helps me to make sense of the world that I interact with, right? And so I think that as the artist, I'm always challenging myself to find and seek out these images and these concepts that have a larger-than-life presence, that have a universal presence.
So that brings up this Strangest Fruit mm-hmm. exhibition that you had. And these are very large canvases, paintings of young men who are suspended in midair, but we don't see any context about what's holding up or why are they rising up or what's happening with them. And this is inspired by the lynching of Mexican-Americans in Texas.
Right. And so when I first stumbled across the subject, this was back in 99, a good friend of mine, Jim Mendiola, who's a filmmaker here in San Antonio, had included one of his movie's script lines as that pertain to this subject. And I remember sort of storing it in my brain for about a decade. And then years later, when I came across Billie Holiday's rendition of Strange Fruit, it sort of went off like a light
bulb. Which was about lynching.
Right. It was written by Abel Mirapol in 1939. So in this series, The Strangest Fruit, you know, I sort of twisted the use of that title in my own perception. It was this idea of taking an already dark portion of American history that really hasn't revealed itself entirely, that goes even further and it goes much deeper than most of us realize. The state of Texas had a number, hundreds of lynchings that occurred between the years 1890 and 1922. And this is, again, something that's not found in the Texas history books. It's not something that's found in the history of the Texas Rangers, because they played a very big key role in a lot of these vigilante mob scenes and lynchings. And so although it's sparked by this important and forgotten history, I was more concerned with how does this relate to me? How does this relate to all of us as citizens, as human beings? And so therefore I chose to depict these 10 larger-than-life portraits of young brown men in a contemporary context, Nikes, hoodies, basketball jerseys, jeans, because I was really trying to sort of push that question of has the noose entirely disappeared? Has the threat of the noose entirely disappeared? Or what is its presence really like in the United States? You know, so I was thinking about things like mass incarceration, for-profit prison systems, the war on drugs, the war on education, war on poverty, biased justice systems, and so forth.
Okay, I'm going to get another caller on the air, but our phone lines are open if you want to ask Vincent Valdez a question or give him a comment about his artwork. The number is 210-614-8980. Michael has called in. Michael, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, thanks. I just wanted to comment and say, you know, I've really appreciated Mr. Valdez's artwork for a long time. I'm from the South Side, grew up in the South Side, went to high school, went out to Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center, worked there as a kid, and then I... as an adult left, and I went to Hawaii and Alaska and Micronesia and all these other places I worked as a scientist, and I was always going, I was always fortunate that I could go back to look at his art and kind of remind me of where I was from and what I came from, and I'm back, and, you know, but it was always there. It's always something I looked at to reflect on my culture, my history, and really my home. And so I just wanted to thank him for that. It was really just very powerful for me and my family to be able to look at these paintings and, you know, for once see a reflection of us and a reflection of our children and, you know, who we are, where we came from. And then the second one, as someone who really likes art but has to work on a scientist budget, do you offer prints, you know, because I can't go out and buy original. So, but it's something that, you know, we've discussed for a long time. Wow, I wish we could find prints of this stuff. Because it just really sinks at home, both me and my wife from the South Side, and just very proud of that, and I love the work.
Sure, so. I appreciate it, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, and welcome back.
Thank you.
There are prints available, you know, and I'm pretty prolific in terms of consistently challenging myself in the studio to attempt various mediums between drawings, paintings, a few film projects, and a lot of printmaking.
Like lithographs? Or
sure, lithographs, serigraphs, a few etchings. And I do have a website, and you know, so for anybody interested, they can always just type in my name on Google and go straight to the website to see what's present and available.
So how concerned are you about being just labeled an artist, maybe even as a Chicano artist, or
sure,
you know, and that you have a political point of view and that's what drives your art?
Well, you know, it's sort of this never-ending dilemma. You know, I think that sort of first appeared when I was a student at RISD because, again, it was sort of this real awakening. You know, it was a brand new experience in terms of producing these images that were just sort of genuine, honest images in terms of my own experiences. And so to have those types of images questioned by the faculty and other students, you know, I really had a hard time grasping and understanding why I was sort of being excluded or why these things were being perceived as so different from being everything else but an American tale, right? And so, but it helped to really strengthen my confidence in what I was doing. It helped to strengthen my communication and dialogue with the public. But it's something that I think for me today is sort of this endless question of why things need to be categorized and sort of placed into a box. And I think that is something that as I've gotten older and more mature in my own practice and more experienced in the art world, I think that we just as Americans have a tendency to want to categorize everything and sort of put it in its place. Whether it's problematic or not, you know, I'm not sure, but I think that for me, my goal has always been sort of to be ever evasive and sort of keeping the viewers interested in, because they're not really too sure what I'm going to come out with next. And it keeps me really excited in the studio.
Okay, let me get another caller on the air. Julian has called in. Julian, hi, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Vincent, I was watching a special about another artist, graphic artist, Banksy,
mm-hmm.
and it seemed like he had an opportunity to do something else, and I was ever wondering if you ever felt stifled that you have to, you know, produce artwork underneath your name, or if you secretly have a graffiti alias.
Are you Banksy? That's the question.
Thanks. I'll take my answer out there. Thank you very much.
All right, Julian. Thanks.
You know, I in no way ever feel stifled in the studio. I mean, the studio for me is such a sanctuary of just sort of extreme creativity and endless possibilities. You know, I think that the thing that, if anything, stifles me at all, it's sort of the number of hours in a day, because I feel like there's never enough time. And, you know, I'm always so excited and eager to start new things and tackle new subjects and try new mediums that, I can very much tell you exactly what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life.
So one of the icons that you play with a lot is the boxer.
Sure.
What is it about the boxer that appeals to you, other than the fact that you both work on canvas?
Well, that's a good point. I never thought about it that way. You know, the boxer for me is sort of, I can't seem to completely stay away from the boxer. He sort of makes a resurgence every so often back in the studio. You know, I love this idea of these young fighters being the sort of larger than life, universal symbols for struggle, the ultimate eternal conflict, whether it's spiritual, personal, physical. You know, it was Joyce Carol Oates who wrote that boxing was imitated life. It was the stage for real life, the documented real life, because it had all the true essence and elements of what we all face in life, you know, love, joy, defeat, tragedy, rejoicing. And
some people have said this is a very macho and aggressive sort of a character, but it's also very vulnerable.
Exactly. And so I've chosen to take the route of in portraying these boxers as these very sort of fragile, vulnerable, and uncertain individuals. They're uncertain not only in the ring, but again, when we think in a more on a more universal context, they're uncertain about their place in the world, right, and in life and in society. And for me, it becomes this sort of eternal physical struggle to identify and mark your presence in your world.
So do you see yourself as a strong documentarian? Are you trying to put something on canvas that could last generations?
You know, I think in terms of being utilizing documentation, whether it's of my own personal experience in the studio and in this world, whether it's of someone else's narrative and story, whether it's of just sort of society as a whole in this era and during this moment in time, I think it's all of the above. And I think
we've seen that with Jesse Trevino.
Sure. You know, and I think for me, I've taken the style and the technique of being this sort of social realist. Even when I've documented or used my brother as this sort of main character in a lot of these portraits, I sort of create these Frankenstein characters. I take a head from someone, I take a pair of feet and legs, and so they're reinvented, and so none of them actually really exist.
Vincent Valdez, he is the chair of painting and drawing program at Southwest School of Art, recently named the 2015 Texas State Visual Artist 2D, and he's a phenomenal artist. Thank you so much for coming aboard and being on the studio today,
Thanks
Vincent.
For having me.
And this is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is produced by Paul Flav and David Martin Davies. Our engineer is Doug DeMore. Management and oversight provided by News Director Shelley Koffler and VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Production assistance is provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation and the GAC Health Foundation.